hour to you, people.
Yes.
It is the Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeBlancis. So for another day of broadcast insolence, we want to thank you all for being here.
Yes.
Whether you're here watching us on the CLTV for the first hour of the program.
I got to say, that Bears game, that took so much out of me. Oh, yeah. Marching around the living room.
Got my workout
on the
in,
floor.
That's for sure.
I passed out at one point. I just had to be resuscitated. Oh my gosh.
I'm not sure this is good for me. I was having a lot of, my blood pressure was up. My pulse was up. I'm like, what are they doing? What? Actually, one of our guys, I will not say who, but somebody on this program sprained their ankle during the game, which was really a moment.
Watching football can be dangerous.
Yeah, it can be.
Oh, it was Sunday. It really was.
They should have gone for two.
Yeah.
It was a wild game. Despite all the turnovers, despite not having the starting quarterback, they still almost came away with their win. They were down by 10 with about a minute 45 to go. And they still somehow sent that to overtime.
I was in
Mitch Trubisky plays, that's probably not even a close game.
No. I was in a bar restaurant for part of it because kids were at the birthday party and all the parents went next door.
It
was at the bar because we're going to see the Bears game. And then that moment when Akeem Hicks rushed through a pile of men to get into the end zone, it was just like that Refrigerator Perry moment. Everyone started screaming.
Wait, why is his nickname The Fridge?
So back in the 1980s, there was a player that played for him who was considered to be like one of the biggest guys ever to play football because he was 300 pounds. He was actually 296.
Now he'd be
the smallest guy.
I thought it was because he freezes people out.
No, because he was the size of a refrigerator. And he most famously said, William Perry, the refrigerator, most famously said that, you know, I'm working because when you open the door, the light goes on. I don't even know what that means.
Love that.
Yeah.
Speaking of that era of Bears, this day in history, the Bears released their Super Bowl shuffle. Remember, 2 months before they won it all.
I would like to say I'm glad they did not do it today.
Me too.
Had they won that game yesterday, that would have been like the Arizona game in the 2006 season. So that kind of, you know, there would have been, I think that would have put them in the elite. Right now, mm-hmm. they're at the top of the
NFC?
the next row down in the NFC and in football generally.
Right,
you know they're not the New Orleans or the Rams, but they are the next guys down. So we'll see.
It's still very exciting.
It is very exciting.
This team.
They have a very difficult, and Ed Obradovich will be with us after 4:40. So come back for that. Stay tuned for that. Whatever, however it works for you. But I will say this: there is a there's a feeling here of kind of there's a little trepidation because they needed to win that game. That was a winnable game because they have four left. Three of the four are going to be really tough.
Yes, they are.
Because you got
the Rams.
LA Rams next week. You got Green Bay the following week. Now, those are both here, so that's good. Then you go to San Francisco, which is a powder puff team, but you never know, right?
Can't
you're traveling to the West
game.
Coast. And then you got, and it may come down to the final game of the season against the Minnesota Vikings up there, which is not easy to win.
No.
So you could see them going 8-8. You could see that happening.
I hope
not. Oh, God. I'm not going to go 8-8.
What'd you say about Trubisky, Kevin?
I love Bears fans. Trubisky, we still don't know if he's going to play
yet. All right.
9-7? You can see him going 9-7.
Well, the Packers are a mess. You may have heard they lost to the Cardinals at home.
I know,
they lost
but
their
the
coach,
Packers.
And unfortunately, they fired Mike McCarthy. I was praying Mike McCarthy would remain their coach forever.
No, you don't want this. You kids.
No, you want McCarthy as their head coach.
No, you don't.
What are you talking about? No. He's a horrible coach.
Why don't we want him?
You
of
don't
course
want,
you want
him
as
fired.
Head coach.
You don't want him fired 2
Right, you don't weeks want him fired.
You don't want him fired 2 weeks before they play the Bears.
Why?
Wouldn't that mean they're disorganized?
No, because they will find a way.
They'll use the energy to prove people wrong.
Oh my
right.
God.
If there's one, they're playing for one game now. Why is he laughing at me?
He doesn't think you're right
game
at all. And I hope you're not either.
Oh my God.
The Green Bay Packers, you know, when the Bears really suck and the Green Bay Packers are great, there were times. There were against all odds, including in Green Bay. There was one where right after Walter Payton died, they won a game they should not have won, right? On a fluke, like it was a phantom block of a field goal, and there was no one could explain how it happened.
Oh my God! Bears
right?
Fans are ridiculous.
Bears are going to do great the next
four
games.
Saying
I feel
the same
it.
Thing. You and Rowe.
No,
we're
not.
No, the exact opposite.
I'm saying they're going 8-8 is what I'm saying.
Bro. Classic Bears fan.
You can't even say that. How about Cody Parkey, though, with his onside kick? He's sort of redeeming himself slowly, isn't he?
Actually, very well.
Kept him in there, right? I mean, wow.
Yes, he was huge. Dead center on every single kick he had yesterday. Dead center. If I'd pulled out my never measure, I would have been able to see that he was exactly in between the two uprights on every single kick yesterday, which was pretty amazing.
Really amazing.
We're going to need him.
8-8, everybody. Season's over.
Don't say that. Gosh.
I'm just reporting what Rose reported.
You think they're going to get past the Rams?
I think that if Trubisky plays, I think they can beat the Rams.
Okay. You think they're going to get past Green Bay, right? Easy, right?
No, I never said easy.
Except for the fact.
They're sneaky.
Devontae Adams will catch 5 touchdown passes.
Never said it would be easy. Not going to be an easy stretch here at all.
No.
Still have a game and a half lead, though, in the NFC North.
That feels good.
All right. I got it.
8-8.
Mark McKinnon is going to join us to talk about the legacy of George H.W. Bush.
Nice.
Stay with us. But first, Judy is going to talk about what's happening in the newsroom at the bottom of the hour.
Well, an arrest and several fatal stabbings on Chicago's West Side.
The body of former President George Herbert Walker Bush is now being moved into the Capitol, where it will lie in state for the next number of hours before there's a funeral in Washington. Mark McKinnon joins us right now, friend of the program. You know him from the circus on Showtime, but a long-time servant, if you will, of the Bushes. He worked for George W. Bush. He knew H.W., or 41, as he's better known. And what we're seeing here is an outpouring of respect for a former president of the United States. Generally, one-term presidents don't get this kind of send-off, but he is a really important American historical figure. Mark?
He is, indeed. Hi, everybody. It's great to see this outpouring of affection for a great public servant. I mean, this was in his chromosomes to serve, and he has been, one of the most sterling resumes in American politics. And it really feels like an era gone by. That's an era's passing. Of course, literally, it is passing because it's the last of the World War II and great war presidents. So, but it's not just the passing of a generation; it's the passing of an approach to politics, a gentility, and a kinder, gentler politics that we used to know. And I think that everybody's reflecting on that a lot right now. And but he had a hell of a ride, and it's a great story, a great love story with him and Barbara, and a great family story. So we're all sad to see him go, but he's 94 and jumping out of airplanes just a couple of years ago.
How about it? The thing that struck me, I lived in Houston really early in my career. I was a reporter and anchor there, and I remember I was so excited that there was a former president who lived there, and I expected to see the Bush, Barbara, and George out a lot. And the thing that always struck me is that, they could have owned the town in terms of being at every major gala and unveiling everything, and they chose to live with their family, and they were involved in certain civic things that they were really close to their heart, like literacy for Barbara, and they would show up infrequently, but make a presence and a contribution when they could. And I just find that so fascinating, their commitment to their family, their commitment to sort of living this life of civic duty beyond that, but staying as much as it could out of the spotlight.
Yeah, they did. And family was always first for him and for them. And there was a great story about when they were living in the vice president's house in Washington, and young Barbara Bush was staying at the house, and she had a stuffed animal and she'd gone to bed and then realized as H.W. was putting her to bed that she'd lost her animal, the stuffed animal. And so he went out with his flashlight with the Secret Service on the ground, searching for about 3 hours for the stuffed animal. And the reason that that's a particularly poignant story is that the next day he had one of the largest, biggest debates of his life. And so he was doing this instead of doing debate prep.
How great is that?
That is an amazing thing. And, you know, you mentioned World War II. The presidents and the leaders who went through World War II in a real way, you know, were actually in combat zones, dealt with Bob Dole and George H.W. Bush come to mind immediately. They dealt with their take on foreign policy very differently than those who came before them that were either World War I era or World War I vets, because, you know, the participation of the United States in World War I was much smaller than it was in World War II. I mean, infinitely
right.
smaller. And so that generation, you know, often called the greatest generation, but those who really touched the war and saw it mm-hmm. for what it was, were very deliberate about what they did, unlike people that came in afterwards, you know, save John McCain because of what he saw in Vietnam. You worry about people forgetting the lessons that we learned in the middle part of the 20th century, all over the world, not just here, but all over the world, and treating this world very differently and more cavalierly, not understanding the principle of the sanctity of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. That because of those, you know, the importance of all those geopolitical relationships that they experienced through that period, they understood the importance of those alliances and keeping you know the glue that binds them together. But I'm also reminded of, you know, the story when he was shot down. And, you know, he survived, but his two plane mates did not. And he said there was not a day in his life that he didn't think about those two. You know, so that stuck with him, too.
Yeah.
I bet.
Mark, thank you very much. Appreciate your time, sir.
Yeah. It's good to talk to you all. And we'll all be thinking about him all week and thinking about his dog, Sully, there in front of the
Oh, my God. I mean, the whole nation has seen that picture now.
I know.
And you are not human if it doesn't bring a tear to your eye.
Because yeah, the dog exactly. knows, picture. Right?
Yeah.
Just, God bless you guys.
You,
bless
too.
You too. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Mark.
You
Happy
too.
Holidays.
All right, let's check in with Judy Pilak in 2 minutes. Pro Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. And CLTV,
yeah,
we should mention. And if I could just, we're producing this on the fly here for the next few minutes. So if I could just, CLTV, if you want to take the live feeds from Washington here for a moment, because that's what we're going to talk about. The hearse is now moving toward the Capitol
mm-hmm.
with the body of George H.W. Bush, former president of the United States. Who is now there's a, it's a beautiful, if a motorcade can be beautiful, it is the
right.
the way that it is moving through Washington as on a clear and twilighty moment here as the sun is going down over Washington on the steps of the Capitol. You have an array of congressional folks and former members of the Reagan Bush 41 and Bush 43 White Houses are there. Dick Cheney is there. John Sununu, I see him there.
Yeah.
A number of other folks. James Baker, the Chief of Staff, Secretary of State and Chief of Staff, who is a was George H.W. Bush's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a moment here as the motorcade is pulling up to the steps of the Capitol. And his casket will be taken up. You've got members of all four branches of the military that are there that are about to take his casket. As you saw, as his casket moved from the funeral home to the airport in Houston, you saw this the pallbearers from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, and it's a stirring, moving moment.
It is. It's something to behold, and it takes you a moment to pause and try to reflect on the man who he was, and the political leader he was. And you just heard Mark McKinnon of the Circus, a longtime Bush family friend, and worked with them, you know, the political trail, but also knew them personally, and talked about how. What a decent man he was, and what how he spoke to bipartisanship, and the letter that George Bush, H.W. Bush, wrote to Clinton after a bitter, bitter campaign became exemplary of like the need for bipartisanship and the need to be rooting for your successor, and that your success is now our country's success. And he was that kind of a man that projected unity.
Right. And, you know, in today's politics, there's a lot of looking back and blaming the other guys, you know, who preceded you. And that is not something, obviously, he was preceded by Ronald Reagan, who is a fabled figure in Republican politics and to a pretty large degree by the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense. But he wasn't blaming Jimmy Carter for things. I mean, it wasn't we didn't play in that blame game. But I think there were a lot of different things that went into what happened here at the very end, which the very end of this political cycle, I should say, or the new political cycle. It started with George H.W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
There was a change in the way, the dynamics in which presidents were marketed from 1980 to 1988. And what you saw, it had a lot to do with technology. It had a lot to do with cable news coming online. You know, in 1980, cable had not penetrated. You still didn't even have it in Chicago. You were just getting it in 1980 in Chicago, right? It had not penetrated half of the television markets in America. So people still only really got their news from their local stations and the networks that were affiliated with those local stations.
Mm-hmm.
By 1988, there was almost full penetration of cable news. By 1988, you were starting to get the nascent internet companies, Prodigy and CompuServe, were coming online. You know, in from 1988 to 1992, when that next election was going to happen, and people started to. You'll get more sources of information, more ways to interact with each other, and the fax machine revolution cannot be discounted. It sounds kind of funny, but people were faxing each other documents and you know, other sorts of things. You know, before there were like these, everybody would get a crank email from their friends or on some sort of email chain that you're like, oh, what is that all about? People were faxing each other things like that.
Hey, and sometimes the fax paper didn't know it was smudge or something. You'd be guessing
right.
What exactly they said. And
But it was also crazy stuff sometimes, too. It was, you know, there was a first way that political entities, whatever they happen to be, whether they're parties or individuals, whatever it is, would get their messages out and try to get to a... the most important thing is word of mouth in politics. And you try to get into communities. It's one thing to say something on television or radio to thousands or millions of people simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
That only has some effect. If you can get on a political level, you can get down granularly, and you can get neighbors to start to agree on things, which is why Facebook has become so important here. And
right.
Prior to that, like I'm saying, you know, it all started back in the early 1990s with Prodigy and CompuServe, which I know the kids are like, what is he talking about?
But that's speaking a strange language.
That is what it was. And so it started to change. And so the more pugilistic way of marketing presidents, the Willie Horton ad, you know, which became very, very famous, which George H.W. Bush said he was sorry that they ever did that. But that was the invention of Roger Ailes and Lee Atwater, who was at the time running his media shop to get him elected to in 1988 to beat Michael Dukakis, who was the then governor of Massachusetts, who was taking him on as the Democratic nominee for president. There was a, you know, it became a little bit more personal and bitter in the 88 campaign than it had been in Reagan Mondale prior to that, or Carter Reagan prior to that. Politics are always tough, but never like they became. And they increasingly got bad. Now, and the Clintons, you know, did it to no end in 92 and then again in 96. But, and it, you know, and you've seen this whole thing sort of degrade. And now we are, as the technology has widened us out, and everybody can choose what information they take in, not just on Facebook in terms of who your friends are, but what news organizations you can choose.
You can block out the whole world if you want to.
And what you feed to your phone, all of that. You now, everybody lives in their own interpersonal silo and just wishes to be agreed with themselves.
It's an echo chamber.
You're in your own personal echo chamber, right? I mean, even more so. And so we become so... individual in terms of our tastes, and then we are now able to tribalize with people all over the world simultaneously in different places and never see them, never touch them, never know them. But yet they become part of your tribe, and that was never the case. If you want to be a part of a tribe, you had to touch them, you had to be able to see them. And that was, you know, went back when George H.W. Bush became president. So you saw a lot of changes here. The thing that I think is so important for George H.W. Bush's legacy, though, is that he was a man of great honor.
He was.
Of great dignity, of respect for government service, for mm-hmm. public service, for the dignity of those who not only serve in the military, which I think we all pretty much agree on, but also the dignity of those who serve in the other branches of government.
Mm-hmm. And it's been announced that, that the current president, Donald Trump, will not speak at the funeral. He will be there. You remember that the Bush family was sharply critical of Trump during the campaign and decided they weren't going to vote for him, even though he was a fellow Republican. But the president has said nothing but nice things, obviously. We've seen his Twitter feed, and today has been just remembering Bush for the man he was and has been quite dignified. But
he's been on a tear.
No, you separate everything else out.
On his Twitter feed today, he said he was not going to do a press conference at the end of the G20 in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, but he said out of respect until after the funeral of George H.W. Bush. But then he went on a tear this morning about Michael Cohen and all the Russia Mueller stuff.
Right.
Roger Stone, that he's, you know, there's a guy with guts. I mean, he's doing all that, but, you know, while this is still going on. So, again, we go into that sort of very hyper-partisan mode. But this stuff, I will say this, the tweets that have been, and I'll say this without thinking I'm wrong about this, let's mm-hmm. put it this way. The statements that have been written for him that he's put up on Twitter
yes.
about George H.W. Bush, are very completely appropriate, and I'm glad to see that he okayed those to go up.
I am too. It would have been a mistake not to be that way at right. this time. And then unfortunately, if you do look on social media, I think the number one trending thing related to George H.W. Bush is Sully, his
yes.
dog, because of that powerful image of his service dog lying by his casket there. It just brings tears to your eyes because you think about the connection there. But
I do want to talk about that on the other side okay. here. I should mention that right now, as the casket is still in the hearse, which is right at the foot of the steps of the Capitol, you do have the Bush family has arrived, George W. Bush leading that along with his wife Laura and his children, and his brother Neil is there, and all of Neil's children and grandchildren mm-hmm. are there. I've not seen Jeb. I'm assuming he's there. I don't know that for sure. He may have arrived and, you know, coming from a different way. He did not come out of Houston as Neil
mm-hmm.
and George W. did. And then you are you're watching this really, and also along there by the. Just on the side of the Capitol where the reflecting pond is, reflecting pool, what do you call it? The body of water.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, reflecting pool. There are American citizens who've come out mm-hmm. to watch this procession as well.
A ton of them. You saw that in Houston, too. Did you see on the freeway as they drove the procession past down to get to the airport to bring him to Washington, people had just stopped on the opposing traffic lane and were gathered all along whatever streets that they could catch a glimpse of this former president. It was pretty moving to see.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, and you know, I think that this is a good moment for Americans to stop and respect the office of the presidency and respect the dignity and decorum with which it should be prosecuted. And I don't mean that the way that it sounded, but you know, the way that, you know what I mean. Office of the president is. Is an important one, and it's important for not only for we to have respect for it, but also for the president to have respect for the office of the presidency, too, at moments like this. And I'm glad to see that the president did, in fact, as it pertains to the death of this president, the 41st president of the United States, at least is dealing with it in a dignified manner.
Today.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly, today. All right, let us now check in with Judy, find out what's coming up at the top of the hour.
As you've been talking about, the nation begins its formal farewell to President Bush.
Then there's the Steve Cochran Show brings you an amazing kid of the week. Tomorrow morning, 6:40, a kid is doing things at her high school to get students and teachers to talk about inclusion. Tomorrow morning.
Stay tuned after 4:40. Chance to win tickets. See the Hawks take on the Canadiens this Sunday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons, find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and listen for your chance to win tickets all regular season long. All right. We've got the casket now of George H.W. Bush is going up the stairs of the Capitol in Washington. It is, you've got representatives of the United States Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard carrying the casket as it passes now his son, the 43rd president of the United States, George W. Bush. Let's just listen in for a moment. Also in attendance is Vice President Dan Quayle, his Chief of Staff, James Baker. Dick Cheney is there as well, and members of the Bush family. It's a solemn and remarkable moment as there are now four living former presidents of the United States.
Right. He's going to lie in state at the Capitol, be buried in Texas on Monday, next to his wife Barbara, who passed away just a matter of months ago.
And we should mention that
after being married 73 years.
We will have full coverage of this over the next couple of days right here at WGN. Judy's News coming away in 2 minutes from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Pro-Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Tom Skilling joins us right now, reminding you that we've got the now sold out, completely sold out. There is a wait list if you'd like to get on it, WGNradio.com, and we will let you know on Thursday if there is room available at our big, the first row L, show at Dirty Nelly's on Friday. It is a Toys for Tits, a concert and radio show.
Very fun.
Big, fun, special event.
Yes.
Santa's going to be there. Guy who thinks he's Santa's going to be there.
Huh. What are we doing that for?
I don't know. I didn't plan all of this. Tom Skilling is going to be there.
Yes! That's exciting!
I'm looking forward to it, guys. Oh. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I should mention that those who are in attendance, we do ask that they bring an unwrapped, ungift-wrapped toy for a boy or girl. Specifically, the Marines this year say there's a special need in boys 6 to 9 years old. If you find toys at the store, if you're going to go out and buy, you might want to look at that. But whatever you bring is fine.
I mean,
we do
toys,
not judge.
Kids all ages, whatever you can get.
For everything you've done. Plus, Elliot Fromm is going to be will be giving away amazing prizes, including from Elliot Fromm from Artbeat Live, a Blackhawks painting, New Balance gift cards, tickets to the opening of A Bronx Tale, courtesy of Broadway in Chicago. Also, Elliot's got the LUVArtShoes.com. He's going to be giving away those as well. And we got Morcus Chocolates, Sweet Allie's, Gluten-Free Bakery, Never Measure is going to be there, Lou Malnati's is going to be there.
Wow.
I need to get all of this in.
Wow.
And it's all brought to us, presented by New Balance Chicago, locations in Lincoln Park, Oakbrook Terrace, Orland Park, and Schaumburg, and sponsored by Apple Chevrolet, Architect of Chicagoland, Verdoliak Law Group, and Hiltons of Chicago.
Can't wait.
See?
Yeah.
Tom, what are you wearing?
What are we to dress up
for
this?
Well, I think the kids are going to be elves, and so they're dressing in sort of that sort of costume. And then Ro and I are going to do sort of holiday festive, you know.
I didn't realize it involved this. I was just going to come, you know, in
anything
weather office.
You got to be festive.
He can do whatever he wants.
Oh.
He can wear a tracksuit if he wants. I don't care.
Tom. I've got a Santa Claus hat.
Sweet.
And I've got a green tie.
That sounds good. I've got one of those blinky light necklaces.
Oh,
I can loan a couple. I've got a couple of them, actually.
Well, you guys are
out if people
really
want
ready for this.
Oh, yeah.
This is great.
It's
well, I'm looking forward to it.
There won't be a sober one of us when we hit the stage at 3 o'clock, so don't worry about it.
I'm dressing up as an elf. What do you want?
Yeah. Right.
Kevin is too, but he won't admit it. He won't acknowledge it, I guess I should
can't
say.
Can't wait, Tom. Can't wait. Been looking forward to it.
Kevin, I can't wait either now that I hear this. I can see Kevin in an elf's outfit. That now there's a.
I can see Kevin in an elf's outfit. Okay. That's the problem. He's like the
you can't unsee it.
I was an elf last year when we were on Michigan Avenue collecting toys.
I know. Then I can't get it out of my brain.
Neither can I.
It's how I see you all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, and how great of you guys to do this, and all of our sponsors. That's really terrific.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
So the.
And the weather looks good, by the way.
Oh, it does.
Just cool, though. 25 or something?
It'll be chilly, but, we've got to keep...
Can we clear the skies here, at least?
Yeah, really great,
there'll be some sunshine. So it looks good. No snowstorms, nothing like that, so...
No snow in the forecast between now and then, right?
Well, there could be a few flurries, but nothing big. No, there's no big storm this
week.
That's
good.
It's going to be nice and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's a chilly week, it looks like we're going to break this pattern down some and get into a more seasonable
temperature. Where's my El Nino? I paid for it. I don't know why I'm not getting it.
Well, remember, Ro, not all El Ninos are created equal. You know, they each is different. But
don't
it is developing still. There's an 80% probability of that. How about that storminess over the weekend? Terrible tornado outbreak downstate.
Yeah.
As Judy's been reported, this is the biggest tornado outbreak this late in the season ever to occur. They were really hard hit down by Taylorville. And 23 tornadoes. The previous biggest in December was 21 in 1957, 61 years ago. So yet another strange benchmark that has been established in this area.
Right. And those tornadoes not only hit Illinois, but Indiana, too.
Yeah,
were you over? Is what anywhere near the Northwestern game when you were there? Or
they had rolled through earlier in the morning.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Most of them that touched down were in Illinois, so I'm sure they were probably watching nervously in Indiana. And there were thunderstorms that got over there, most of the touchdowns were in the St. Louis, Lincoln, Quad Cities forecast office areas of responsibility. And I saw a plot of the tornadoes. Boy, it was amazing. You see a plot like that in December.
Right.
But this storm is the one that lambasted California a couple days before, produced a dust storm down in Texas and New Mexico, and headed up this way with our wind-driven rain here in the city and these thundery downpours downstate. We had thunder, lightning, and hail in parts of this area on Saturday as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the weather continues to amaze. Yeah,
absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Well, let's just as long as we don't have a big snowmaker.
No, nothing like that in sight. Nope. There had been some indications last week there might be something, but this thing is sheared out. So that removes any threat. It means our gathering on Friday is going to be fantastic.
Yes, there will be no excuses, is basically what you're saying.
No. We've got to get Santa some artificial snow, you know.
Oh, true. Santa's got to get the sleigh out.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
But,
wait, what?
But I don't know. You know, Santa's pretty... He improvises pretty effectively, so I think he'll...
The guy just gets it done every year.
He
knows what he's doing.
Because the real Santa's going to be there, and then I don't know who this dude is who thinks he's
either.
Santa.
Yeah,
but it seems weird.
It's a weird thing that's going on there.
Boy, we're going to have to...
Do we have security at this event?
Make sure for Santa?
The dueling Santas? Well, the real Santa.
Well, the elves will take care of Santa. Okay. Violetta and I, the elves.
Yeah. Is that against the law, pretending to be Santa when you're not?
I would hope so.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Impersonating Santa? Yeah, absolutely it is. But thank God Boris will be there.
Hey!
Oh, God. All right.
Boris. Who was that?
The elf over his shoulder.
Yeah, that's Boris. He's
Boris?
Violetta's nightclub buddy.
Oh,
who,
I see. You guys have talked about him before.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice guy. Real family guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't say nice guy is not how he's ever been described.
No. Yeah. Never.
Scary, intimidating guy, maybe.
Kind of a strange outburst as a come on, when you're first meeting him. You know, have a guy. What did he sound like?
Yeah. Very enthusiastic.
That's all we've heard him. That's all he says, Tom. You never really have a conversation with the man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the kind of guy that would encourage you to extend your arm to, you know, shake hands with him and all, and then pull it back real fast.
He does sound jolly, though, doesn't he?
Don't touch me.
Don't look at
jolly
me.
In a strange sort of way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like maybe the medication didn't kick in properly or something like that.
He's constantly looking at you like he's going to kill you.
Right.
You can't tell past the sunglasses.
You're not sure where his eyes are looking? Yeah. That always creeps me out.
Yeah.
Will he be in the VIP section or is he going to
meander? We built our own Boris VIP section for him.
Oh.
He's got his own couch corner, bottle service. He's bringing his own. He's bringing actual bottle service waitresses in from other restaurants and clubs around
with
the area.
With the sparklers.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And just speakers around him.
Well, really we got the WGN security team there, I'm sure.
I would like to have them just move him out, yes. Yeah.
Yes. I'll tell you.
Well, and the Palatine Police.
Keep him down in the basement.
Yeah. You know, I don't think he's going to be making this. We told him it's somewhere else.
Gotcha. I see. Well, he doesn't like to leave his basement anyway.
Right, exactly.
So,
yes.
He won't be up in time anyways for it. It's 3 o'clock an early wake-up call.
Boris will not be up in time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That is for sure. All right. We are watching here the procession.
Yes.
Now the president's body is lying in state in the rotunda of the Capitol. There are some speeches going on by the majority leader of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House just stepped away. It's a beautiful service here so far. The vice president's now going to get up and say a few words. It is the amount of decorum that goes on in moments like this. It really is stunning to watch the pomp and circumstance of these kinds of events, and how the United States military and government here, you know, all of the different protocols that are in place, and it is a beautiful moment to see these. And interesting here, they did add the Coast Guard to this honor guard in the Capitol, where you've got Army, Navy, Marine, and Air Force, and then Coast Guard as well, that are protecting the casket of the president now. Very, very interesting to watch.
Beautiful
ceremony.
It's like for a few moments, an hour a day, Washington, D.C. comes together, and there's mutual respect and unity. Feels good.
Yes.
It does feel good.
I think
good.
Especially after, you know, recent weeks and months.
Oh, for sure. And there will be people on the social media right now that are like, well, why didn't the president come to the Capitol? That is not the role of the president. This is the vice president is there as the president of the Senate pro tem.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why he is there at the moment. But before people get all political here, it takes only a moment before Twitter goes nuts about something politically here. But this
That's
is really
the world we're in.
So did you see? I mean, it's we've true. All seen this. Sully the dog lying by the casket yesterday.
Mm. Oh gosh, if that doesn't tug at your heartstrings,
not a human if you don't start bawling uncontrollably when you see that.
I know.
But there is good news for Sully.
Yes.
Sully has been reassigned to Walter Reed Hospital.
Well, he'll be serving as a service dog helping veterans there.
Oh, wow.
So he moves on to his next mission, as you saw the
How old is Sully?
I think four? pretty young.
I think
he hasn't been with
2-year-old lab.
Two-year-old
lab. All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
He's just beyond puppy stage then. That's
Right.
Wow.
Imagine the training that goes in by the time they're two, if they're already up and ready to go.
They say it's a year of training, and then you go and train on the job after that for special needs. This dog could pick up small little things. It could open doors. It had all kinds of special gifts and was able to help.
Now, that's not a good pet afterwards if it can open doors.
I know.
I just want to point that out. you got to keep working. It's got that figured out.
Yeah, that's the saddest picture I've ever seen.
Can you open a refrigerator? That would be very dangerous.
Yeah. He was coming off the plane today. He came off of the plane that is designated as Air Force One when the president is on board, was flown down to Houston to pick up the casket of George H.W. Bush.
It's Special Air Mission 41 today.
And returned. And Sully was one of the first off the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was really something as they were, you know, before they removed the casket from the plane.
I love the name, too, Sully.
Yeah.
Named after the Sully, the pilot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Captain Sullenberger.
I know.
That's amazing.
That is, that's really moving.
Sully's a star, man. He immediately became one of those images that is just, It just, it, and again, it goes to the respect for office. I mean, the one, if for a nation that is so battered by the politics of the, by the practitioners of politics in America right now, that there is, there where we can have a moment of pause and reflection on what it means to be an American, what it means to, what the presidency of the United States means, and the dignity and decorum that George H.W. Bush brought to that role, and his bipartisanship, and it, I mean, it was tough back then too. People were, he called, I think one of the reasons he lost that race in 92 was in the last weeks, you know, he went more aggressive rhetorically, and it just didn't suit who he was. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget, he was in Michigan. He was, I think he was in Hamtramck or somewhere outside of Detroit, Michigan, making a speech, and he referred to Bill Clinton and Al Gore as bozos. And, you know, and back then, everybody was like, oh my God, he called them
how
bozos.
Horrific.
Right? And everybody stopped, and it was like, oh, the president of the United States demeaned the office by calling his opponents bozos.
Mine.
I mean, it was
wouldn't
like
those days back.
It was, right. It was like an insane moment, and people were like, oh, I can't believe it. And it, but it hurt him. I mean, it really did hurt him. Now,
yeah,
the economy.
That was not what you associated with George H.W. Bush.
Right.
That was just not him,
right? He said a bunch of bozos, right? It was funny how quaint that all is by today's standards, and you know, can we get back to a moment like that? Probably not in a social media age, but can we at least stop and appreciate that moment? And maybe everybody can pause and grow up a little bit here.
Good point, Ro. Yeah.
That's all I want to say about
absolutely
that.
True.
Yeah.
Well, think of the portfolio with which he arrived in, you know, in the presidency. My gosh, he
was qualified.
CIA director.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Navy, a veteran who had survived that horrific crash mm-hmm. in the Pacific.
Ambassador to China. It goes on.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. right. Ambassador to China.
Yeah. He was an amazing public servant to the United States of America. Yeah. And this is a moment of great, should be a moment of great remembrance and honor and pride for what the American government can be. I mean, this is when you read those Tom Clancy novels and you're rooting for the Americans, which you should mm-hmm. be in that.
It should be.
You know, that is from the George H.W. Bush era of the CIA in the United States of America. Right there.
It's so true. I heard somebody talking about when he had Putin visit him up in Kennebunkport, and I guess he loved that boat up there, and he went up there and he really opened it up. In fact, it was on 60 Minutes. I think it was George 43rd mm-hmm. talking about it, and he said Putin's bodyguard went white. You know, as the
on the cigarette boat.
Yeah,
yeah. He had a go fast boat.
A
and they said
boat?
He used to outrun the Secret Service.
Yeah,
yeah.
He'd bring people on, and say, "See that?
Watch this
boat." Yeah, right.
Yeah, 80 miles an hour. All right, Tom, we got to run. Thank you very much,
thanks,
sir.
Tom.
Okay, guys, see ya.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Tom Skilling, let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
A record number of tornadoes in Illinois last month.
You know, we could sit here and go back and forth all day. My God, there's certain things that are common sense and smart football in this game. You got to know the rules. You got to understand the rules and when to work them. And this coach doesn't.
Oh, God.
OB
joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline, and okay, well, I guess the first thing that, you know, immediately comes to mind here is, would you have gone for two there at the end of the game?
No.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks for stopping by. That's OB. I know Bradford. You can hear him Sundays. I know you're on the road, right? Isn't that the rule? On the road, you go for the tie.
You go to win a football game. I'm not one of these guys that's going to give you these kind of answers, bro. I'm going to tell you flat out what I think. And, you know, Ed, the Bears, you know, they went out there and they were in it to the final seconds, you know, so kudos to them for that. But I'll tell you the one thing that I noticed immediately in the game was the New York Giants. If you watch, bro, they were all over our receivers. Instead of playing anywhere from 7 to 8 to 10 to maybe 11, 12 yards back, which normal defenses do, because we're a dink and dunk team. This is the first defensive team that came up and pressed them. And it made our receivers work harder to get separation because it's, everything we throw is short passes. And what the only thing, we finally figured it out. Obviously, it must have been in halftime because with 11 minutes to go approximately in the third quarter, that was the first time we went downfield. In the second quarter, they should have figured it out, and they should have been running those post patterns and fly patterns all day long. That's what you do. When somebody presses you, make them play football.
Hey, I got yelled at by Kevin Powell. He's the sports guy.
I think Kevin's right on this.
I don't know if I... What did I yell about?
Yeah, you said you were wrong. I said it's possible that the Bears... this was a very important game for them to win. Because they have their remaining four games are going to be very difficult, even in San Francisco, where San Francisco is playing for pride at the end. And everybody's like looking past Green Bay, like, oh, Green Bay, don't worry about it. They got a new coach. That's exactly the kind of game that Green Bay will show up for one thing this year, and that is to try to damage the Bears in some way, shape, or other. I could see them going 8-8. Am I crazy?
I don't think we're going to go 8-8. And the reason why, and I'm just putting all my marbles in, on that this is a magical year. I've been around a long time. I've never seen calls by the referees. Bears getting touchdowns when there's pick plays, perfectly illegal plays. And it's been going on all year. We sit in that up in the studio and just sit there and scratch our heads. What's going on here? And it's game after game, and it's a magical year. And they better take advantage of it, because I'll tell you what, it's not going to happen next year. You're not going to get six balls on defense and run them back for touchdowns. Seven, and the season's not even over with. It's just not going to happen. So I believe it's a magical year, and my money's on the Bears. I think they can do it. They've got a defense. We've won basically every game we played on defense. We really have. And if the offense can come alive and we can start playing big boy football instead of the dink and dunk / trick game, I think we'll be in good shape.
Go ahead, Anna. Sorry.
I was just saying they face the Rams next, though. Are you concerned about that with their record and how they're playing?
Anna, when you're a Bears and your team that we're now, we're 8-4, that's what you want. You got the best team. What are they, 11-1, 12-1, something like that?
11-1, yeah. Best record in the NFL.
Okay, you know what? That's what you want. You don't want to play a guy, that team that's, 2-10, 2-12 or whatever. You don't want. You want the challenge, because you know what? You're going to find out exactly who the hell you are come this Sunday night. You're going to find out who the Bears are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Will our receivers be able to get separation? Will they start giving the ball to Jordan Howard and start running the ball and not go half and then forget about him, that he's even on the team? So this game, Anna, is a game that this is the one you live for. You only got 16 games, mm-hmm. and you're in the hunt, and I told you it's magical. Things are happening for him that don't normally happen. And we've got the Rams at home, just like we had the Vikings, and what a challenge. And again, I can't stress it enough, this is what the players live for, to play a game like this.
Hey, Obi, I hate to even mention the name, but my biggest concern going into Sunday night's game, of course, is number one, Mitch Trubisky's health, but two, the offensive line probably had their worst game of the year. They gave up 5 sacks, and this Sunday, Aaron Donald comes to town. He's probably the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year right now. He's a monster up front. And Cody Whitehair, I hate to mention the name. Chase Daniel, most of those botched snaps were on Chase Daniel. They went right through his hands. But not all of them are perfect. And Cody Whitehair next Sunday night has to get the snap off and then turn his attention to Aaron Donald. Do you have concerns about the interior offensive line right now, OB?
Yeah, a bit. But Kevin, you guys, just believe what I'm talking. It's a challenge, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a challenge for Whitehair. It's a challenge for our two guards. You know, the kid's he's a monster. There's no question about it. But we've got a couple guys on our defensive line that are monsters, too. And y'all better worry about our guys. You better worry about Hicks. You better worry about Mack. You better worry about our two linebackers coming in and blitzing and going after him and try to take those people out of what they do best. And watch the Bears, Kevin. Watch them. I bet you they'll come after. We'll be blitzing from the get-go. That's my prediction. And we've got to go after Goff and take him out of his game. If you can do that, we'll have a good chance of winning.
You know, I don't mind trickification in the modern NFL. You see a lot of teams doing it. You can't live on it. But I do want to ask you, as it pertains to Bears football, I think it's fun to have Akeem Hicks get the ball and lumber into the end zone. That's good for the fans. It's good for the team. It also gives a different look. It was a good misdirection look too. They used it later in the game. You know, your thoughts on using the guys from the D?
I'm against something like that, as I am against taking Eddie Jackson, who's having a phenomenal year at safety for the Bears, and this is the second or third time I've seen him over on the offense, playing in the flanker position, putting him in motion or running him from that flanker spot. Okay, we've got five tight ends. Five! Okay, only one can get on the field. You mean to tell me that Pace can't go and find another receiver or two or three receivers and let's go with two tight ends and put a couple of more receivers and leave Eddie Jackson alone? All you're doing is putting him in harm's way. Believe me, if he goes in motion, he can get cranked just like the rest of them. He's perfect where he is. Don't take that position. Don't take it away from him. Quit putting him on offense. Hicks, forget about it. Who's a better runner, Jordan Howard or Hicks?
I don't know.
That's a good point.
If I had to be fallen on by one guy, yes. I'd rather be fallen yes. on by Jordan Howard. I guess that's what I have to look at.
Speaking of running the ball, OB, how fun has Tariq Cohen been? He continues to ascend and kind of be a game changer, a playmaker, not just in running the ball, but more so in offense. 156 receiving yards. He was targeted 14 times yesterday. You like what they're doing with Cohen right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what they did on that wheel route?
Yeah.
They could never figure it out. The Giants could never figure it out. It's too bad we couldn't have, you know, capitalized on it a little more. But he came out that wheel route, and they never figured it out.
So
what? Just keep peppering it. But that kid, I'll tell you what an asset he is to any team. To have a kid with his speed, forget about his speed. The kid can really fly. But his quickness, Kevin, I mean, this guy can come up. You talk about getting separation from a defensive back. Boom, he's in front of you. Boom, bang, he's gone. He's gone. And that's a lot of talent. And I like what they did with him Sunday. I like to see him used more, but more from that slot position, not from the running back position. You put him in motion in the slot. Let him come, let him run, put him in motion, let him go downfield.
Yeah.
And play. So he's a great asset to this team. He really is.
It's kind of funny when they try to make him run off tackle as a running back. He never goes in the place he's supposed to go, except for that one play where, you know, if you get full line movement and everyone's going to the right and they've got the good and they get a good seal block on, that's a great place to have him. But
tough as hell. Oh, there's some God. Shots he takes from it. He's not getting up from that one. And he bounces right back up.
I kind of wonder this. Yeah, I wonder if that helps him.
That he's small?
I wonder if his, you know, because his sheer mass is not going to create in a collision the same force that you'd have in a collision between two big guys. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that just kind of he seems to bounce off guys a little bit. I mean, you cannot help but love him. And he ran 54 yards for a 4 yard gain yesterday, and it was
he keeps running.
It was just amazingly entertaining. That goes down. Listen, OB, if they had won that game, it would go down in one of the greats in Bears history. They didn't, but it was this is an entertaining, no matter how what you think of this year, it is so much better than we have seen in even in the Lovie Smith era. This is a more fun team.
It's exciting.
Oh, absolutely. I told you, it's a magical year. The things that are happening, they're absolutely, I just sit there. Did you see what I just saw? And that's what I'd say to Dan Hampton. We just look at each other. You got to be kidding me. A ball fumbles. It gets kicked back to a Bear guy. Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. But getting back to Cohn, what you were talking about, not only is he quick and he's got that exceptional speed, he's pretty damn smart, too. Because if they called and I'm a running back and I'm his size and they called an off-tackle play or between the guard and center or the guard and tackle and there's somebody like Hicks staring me in the eye, somebody like Godzilla, I'm out of there. So he's a pretty smart kid.
Yeah, he is. He's
Give him that one, too.
Yeah, he's just a ton of fun to watch. Just a ton of fun. All right, OB, thank you very much. We will talk to you. We'll see you on Sunday. Are we doing it before or after the game on Sunday?
We're doing the pre from 3 to 4:30, obviously on WGN. But I mean from 3 o'clock, 3 p.m. to 4:30, and then right after the game from 10:30 till midnight.
Got it.
All right. Awesome.
Can't wait. Thanks, OB.
We'll be listening.
Thank you, OB.
Kevin, just real quick here now, folks, and all your listeners, and just believe what I'm telling you, and like to say it again. This is what a player wants. When you play at this level, and you're where you're at today. And in the season with just four games to go and the best teams coming into your place, that's what you want. You want the victory. You want to take them down.
Love it.
I'm fired up. Ready
Me
to
too.
Go.
Bears! Bye-bye.
Go Bears! This is a magical year. I love that. Love the way
it feels that,
that
way.
It does.
Yeah.
I think it does. Something special.
I mean, despite the loss, keep in mind they were down 10 with 1:47 to go and somehow sent that to overtime.
Right.
That was amazing.
It was wild.
I mean,
it was a workout watching that game. Anna and I were talking about that before. I was jumping up and down. I'm like, my body was sore.
I totally fainted at one point.
Wild.
I think it was more work than it was getting down to Indianapolis, watching the Big Ten Championship and coming back. And I kept thinking to myself, three hours, and I was so looking forward to the game because I'm like, okay, I can relax. You know, we're not traveling, we're not doing anything. Just kind of sitting around watching
the game.
And then I'm like, oh my, my heart was like a rabbit. There was one moment where I thought, I should stop watching this game. This is bad for my health.
I know. You couldn't look away, though.
Yeah,
it was
amazing. It is a magical year. It is a lot of fun. All right, let's check in now with Judy Pylak. It's magical for her, too.
He never failed to answer the call to serve his country, remembering President Bush.
Con Show with Anna DeVlantzis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes, indeed. You and Kevin survived going down in Indianapolis to see the Northwestern Wildcats.
We have a little story we'll tell you in a little bit. We got a lot of business here to get to before we do that.
All right.
So we'll on the other side.
Dying to hear.
Yeah.
We did some things. Worried that you guys would get into trouble, and I bet that's the case. Although I didn't hear
it. It wasn't us that got into trouble. There was someone else in our group that got into trouble, and we'll tell you about that. Yeah, it was really
And I wasn't even there.
No, that's... I know. But you have a run for your money now, I would like to say.
See, I'm not that bad.
Listen, right now, you're listening right now. If you're listening right now, caller number 19, 312-981-7200 wins a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Canadiens on Sunday. That's a big deal right there, Original Six matchup. Courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons, find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. Listen for your chance to win tickets all regular season long. Right now, caller number 19, 312-981-7200. Very fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready? Because this is an important moment.
It's the top five on the Rokon Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokon Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at...
Number five.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, in an interview on CNN, still denies that there's any direct evidence that links the Saudi crown prince to the murder of Jamal Khashoggi.
Can you confidently tell his four children that he was not involved in that order?
Well, obviously, sitting in an unclassified setting, here's what I can say. I have read every piece of intelligence that is in the possession of the United States government. And when it is done, when you complete that analysis, there's no direct evidence linking him to the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. That is a accurate statement, is an important statement, and it is the statement that we are making publicly today.
Why is it an important statement if all signs point to it? And the intelligence community widely believes that even though you don't have the smoking gun, that he was responsible, because certainly knew about it.
He's got the oil, because he can do whatever he wants, and he's a good high fiver. And Mike Pompeo, you remember, Mike Pompeo ran the CIA. So Wolf was like, well, but you ran the organization that is pretty sure he did it.
Did the CIA conclude with high confidence that he was involved?
I can't comment on intelligence matters, CIA conclusions. I didn't do it when I was the director. I'm not going to do it now.
Because you've seen all the reports in the media about that.
I've seen lots of reports in the media, Wolf. They often are untrue.
Mm-hmm. Does this one? Tell us if it's untrue.
He did write the op-ed for the Wall Street Journal explaining as much of his thoughts as he could, saying that the Saudi partnership and relationship is vital to U.S. interests.
Here's the problem. Transcripts are coming out of a conversation that was had between one of the guys involved in the murder and Mohammed bin Salman.
Mm-hmm. Crown Prince.
Yeah. And that's a problem. And so the evidence is coming out into the public sphere now. And as the evidence comes out, it just becomes more and more clear that he did have something to do with it. And the question is really a political one in the United States. You know, there obviously is one for, you know, to deal with, you know, the grief of the family of Jamal Khashoggi. But the political question in the U.S. is, why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And is it really that important to continue to say to the Saudis, who are not going to park their money anywhere else? I mean, the idea is, well, we'll lose all this business and the price of oil will go up. And they could do that for any reason. You know, that's just because we let him get away with murder, literally, this time, doesn't mean in another couple of weeks he doesn't try to get away with something else. And then we go, yeah, you can do whatever you want. I mean, I don't think that previous administrations would have done this and worried about the consequences, because where are they going to go? They're not going to go do a military arms deal somewhere else. They can't do it. It's not. They've already bought our systems. They'd have to buy all brand new systems from the Russians that aren't as good. It wouldn't work. You can't. If you're going to buy new jets, they don't work with the jets that they currently have. They'd have to give all. They'd have to start all over again. And in terms of oil, they have to sell their oil, right? It's not like they're not going to sell their oil, and they're not. And if they want a market to put their money in, they're not going to choose a market other than the United States to be safe and to make money in. They have to come clean, and you have to ask for further reform if they are going to be that close of an ally. And if we're going to go sell them airplanes, don't we want to sell our military arms to people who may one day not be trying to kill our own soldiers with them?
Anyway. Seems logical.
Yes.
Number four.
Don't get me started. Now you got me started.
I thought the Bears were going to get you started and you'd never get off it, but you kind of calmed down from that.
Mm-hmm. Former mayor of New York City and current attorney to the President of the United States, Rudy Giuliani, a radio interview today, trashing Robert Mueller.
Well, I think the special prosecutor has stepped over the line now with the way he's intimidating people in order to tell what he believes is his version of the truth. When you look at Mr. Manafort, they've had him in solitary confinement for 5 to 6 months, I think, and they have repeatedly questioned him, and they have told him they don't believe him, and they want him to give certain forms of evidence that would implicate the president in things that Mr. Manafort says are untrue.
Mr. Manafort is accused of actually trying to get witnesses to change their story about him while he
That's not good.
Was actually already on when before they put him in jail awaiting sentencing. Now he's been convicted, but before that they put him in jail before he went to trial because he was out there reaching out to witnesses and the trial trying to get them to change their testimony. Really? Really? You're going to really Paul Manafort is the hill you're going to die on, Rudy Giuliani?
Each one of those times he has told them, I'm sorry, I can't tell you what you want to hear. So there's a point at which they're sending a terrible signal. An ethical prosecutor would stop this and pursue some other line of inquiry with other people. After all, he's just saying what everybody else has said. There's no evidence that the president was involved in any kind of collusion about the election.
I think that story's falling apart a little bit.
Why do you say that?
Oh, just because of everything.
The idea
that the president and the people around the president, that story that there was nobody in the campaign that was involved with the Russians at all, has changed completely here. Right. Every time they push back, the White House push back or the Trump organization or whatever it is has pushed back and said, we were never involved. There's nothing. There's no shred of anything. You could say that all you want. But every day another ornament falls off that tree. They are not telling the truth about it. They weren't telling the truth then. They're currently not telling the truth. The question is, how far are they not telling the truth? I get it. Rudy Giuliani is paid to be the attorney. I understand. All right. We'll get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
The vice president offering the nation's condolences to the family of the late former President George H.W. Bush.
Then there's this zombie housing in Chicago, rotting, abandoned homes. What's being done to bring them back from the dead? WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
All right, top 5 continues. We've worked our way up to
number 3.
Former NFL player Kareem Hunt. Well, former as of yesterday. Kareem Hunt apologized in an interview with ESPN after a video released shows him pushing and kicking a woman. Hunt was cut from the Kansas City Chiefs following the video and lost his endorsement from Under Armour.
The kick. You kicking a woman while she was on the ground. You kicking a woman, period. How do you explain that?
You can't really explain it. The video shows that I was in the wrong, and I'm not that type of person. I'm really disappointed and embarrassed for myself and for my family, and I really am taking action to learn from this and do everything possible to, you know, become a better man.
I think the NFL is also got his hands are not exactly clean over there, because they heard about it, they investigated, but nobody could get the video for it until, and then nothing happens until there is a video. Just feels
I find it really hard to believe that
again.
NFL security did not get that video. Right. NFL security is second only to the CIA and FBI. As a matter of fact,
it's like they don't want to find the video.
Right. Well, they don't want to let it out. It's unclear. It's a private company, so it's unclear. We'll never know for sure.
No, the hotel stood behind it, unless there's a felony committed, and then we will turn it over to the police department, but that's our policy, and somehow TMZ got it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
great policy.
Yes. NFL security is a bunch of former FBI guys.
I'm sure they're excellent, but at some point the NFL might have had enough data to know that there was something that happened here. But it just feels as if at some point they drop the ball and decide that they don't want to. No, is the way it appears sometimes. And then suddenly, as soon as there's a video, then there's.
All right. I think we need a video now when it comes to this stuff.
Nobody, yeah, you do.
Nobody really believes it unless it's
nothing happened
on film.
Well, there's too much money at stake.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's see if somebody picks him up. I think somebody will because he's so young.
He's apologized.
Right.
It's all okay. I'm kicking a woman while she's pushing her down and then kicking her, coming over and kicking her. I mean, the push down was interesting because it was like a kinetic thing that happened because she was rushing forward. But then going and kicking her makes no sense.
Dumb. Bad.
Yeah, he bad. Bad on
Very
every
bad.
Level. All right. Checking in at
number 2.
After a few weeks off, Saturday Night Live returned with a brand new show, and they had a Trump-themed cold open with Alec Baldwin as Donald Trump, as well as a chorus of Trump world characters this week, including a vampire-styled Rudy Giuliani, bare-chested Vladimir Putin, and the Saudi crown prince.
God, I'm sorry, just I can't believe you and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia had that whole handshake yesterday.
Oh, what? That? That meant nothing to me. It was just a totally improvised handshake. I'm not, like, bros with him or anything.
Hey, Vladdy Daddy.
Wait, I thought I was your number one.
Oh, totally. You're not my side piece. You're like my main girlfriend. This Saudi guy is just a random hookup.
Wow.
Too much material.
Yeah. Although it is, the irony is certainly rich with the fact that we already had an Alec Baldwin incident in between,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, he's coming back now. He addressed that.
He did during
the piece, mm-hmm. right? He sort of did it in the middle of the deal. It was like as the Trump character. He said, "You know, I haven't been this mad since that parking incident." But this is still that handshake was the incident seen around the world. It's the American
chills.
Empire basically just got called out, and the rest of the world's like, okay. And the G20 did the same thing. It's like, it's the G19 plus one. It's like, okay, we'll deal with you guys when you're back to being sane now.
You're talking about the Putin and Crown Prince handshake.
No, I'm talking about the United States of America.
Oh.
Right? I mean, Trump wasn't in a ton of those meetings.
Right.
The one thing that did get done, which was important, was the one with President Xi where they put a timeout on the tariffs. But until that's finally done, nothing comes out of that. That's the first step in starting the negotiation. But that could have been done unilaterally. All the rest of the stuff was just sort of like, okay, whatever this guy's going to be doing. It was not a particularly great moment for the U.S. And then to be able to make fun. I mean, there's an opportunity here that the president has now, especially as the nation's attention turns toward the funeral of a very respected president of the United States. That he turns and maybe behaves a little differently. I mean, his excuse that he left the G20 and mm-hmm. he didn't do a press conference because he wants to, you know, maintain the decorum. And they released a beautiful statement on the president's Twitter account over the weekend, right?
Totally did.
Right? But then the president this morning, going off on Mueller.
And Roger Stone, which some say is sort of, he's a witness, right, in the case. And
right.
It seems like you maybe should stay away from that.
Right. He's saying that Roger Stone has guts, unlike some other people I know. Like Fat Betty over there. Although he seems to have lost a lot of weight. I don't think Michael Cohen has actually digested a meal in 4 months. I mean, come on. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. It appears when you don't do a press conference that when you're leaving the G20 because of the death of a former president of the United States, and then you go on Twitter and you act right. like that, it seems like you are dodging the press conference and using the death of a president to dodge it. That is not appropriate.
Your focus isn't truly on a man lying in state and being respected by the country and honored.
And finally.
Number one.
George H.W. Bush, the 41st president of the United States, whose steady hand and foreign policy vision led the nation through a period of sweeping global change, has died. Born into the tradition of service, Bush was a son of a senator, celebrated World War II combat pilot, student athlete, Texas oil man, Republican congressman, National Party chairman, pioneering diplomat, and spy chief. After his own 1980 presidential campaign came up short, he served two terms as Ronald Reagan's vice president before reaching the pinnacle of political power by winning the 88 presidential election. Soundly defeating Democrat Michael Dukakis after losing the White House in 92, Bush became a widely admired political elder who leapt out of airplanes to mark his birthday milestones, emphasized the generosity of his soul. He forged a close and unlikely friendship with the man who beat him, Bill Clinton. Clinton shared the contents of a letter that was left for him on the day of his inauguration.
I wish you great happiness here. There will be tough times made even more difficult by criticism you may not think is fair. I'm not a very good one to give advice, but just don't let the critics discourage you or push you off course. You will be our president when you read this note. I wish you well. I wish your family well. Your success is our country's success. I'm rooting hard for you.
How did you feel when you received that letter?
I thought it was vintage George Bush. I thought he meant it, but I also thought he was trying to be a citizen in the highest sense of the word. Mm-hmm. It was profoundly moving to me personally.
George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president of the United States, was 94.
For the first time in this century, for the first time in perhaps all history, Man does not have to invent a system by which to live. We don't have to talk late into the night about which form of government is better. We don't have to wrest justice from the kings. We only have to summon it from within ourselves. We must act on what we know. I take as my guide the hope of a saint. In crucial things, unity. In important things, diversity. In all things, generosity.
That is the president from his inaugural address, President George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president of the United States. Pat Brady joins us, who used to run the Republican Party here in the state of Illinois. And the the Bush family. You obviously been involved in Republican politics. You actually, interestingly enough, were in the U.S. Attorney's office during the Clinton investigation, weren't you?
Yeah, I actually was hired when George Bush was president. And Bob Mueller was deputy chief of the criminal division. So Bob Barr was the AG and George Bush was president.
So, but once you left the U.S. Attorney's office and you went into actual politics, how do you see George H.W. Bush being remembered in this pantheon of presidents in the late 20th century?
I think the longer we go in history and look back at him, the more he will climb up the ladder of successful presidents and what he did. Just in that speech talking about the end of the Cold War, what he did to keep those states from blowing up into civil wars, how he handled that. I thought when he lost in 92, because Ross Perot got in and took the 18% and Bill Clinton wins, that the country made a mistake, because at that point we were the only superpower and we had a chance to really reshape the global dynamics. And President Clinton came in and focused primarily on the economy and kind of left the foreign policy to the side, which I think was a mistake. I think George Bush would have done a much better job marshaling that through. And a lot of these problems we have now, I don't think we would have.
You know,
I'm not saying as a partisan, I believe that.
Listen, there are a lot of reasons for this, that the rise of populism, as you've seen. And
well, Perot was the start of it.
Well, Perot for sure was. And the way that Bill Clinton prosecuted politics in his years there, obviously, you know, after the Monica Lewinsky situation, and, you know, it changed the dynamics. But there were so many things that happened, a lot of them exogenous. A lot of them had to do with technology and the way people communicate and the rise of cable news and talk radio and then the internet and all those things changed how we sorted ourselves politically in this country. And the Clintons were very good at figuring out how to create avenues and angles for that and find their own partisans. But we became so bitter. And Republicans, you know, they did it their own way, too. I mean, it really became a loggerhead situation as Republicans were trying to coalesce, were trying to really create aggressive tribes against each other in this era. And I found the way that the Clintons behaved in the White House and the way that the Trump people behave now in the White House, you're seeing sort of the alpha and the omega of a very dark period of time in politics, and one in American politics and America on the world stage, because America pulled itself off the world stage back then. I think George W. Bush tried to live in his father's legacy a little bit, put us back on the world stage, but we got involved in two wars.
One necessary, one not.
Obama took us off the stage, and now Trump is trying to really take us off the stage, not just, you know, in terms of military, although he's not really doing that yet. It's really, he's trying to take us off the world stage in the economic way, which is, I don't even begin to understand.
Well, that certainly doesn't comport at all with conservatism. We're free traders. I mean, on the economic side, we're free traders.
Certainly Bush, the George H.W. Bush's conservatism, which came out of the Reagan conservatism.
Right, which is conservatism. So when you talk about what Trump's approach to this is not, I've said this all along, he's not a conservative, isolationism and all the things that he espouses. But I do agree, but you can't completely exonerate George Bush. He did do Willie Horton and he did have Lee Atwater.
I want to talk about that because that's a really important moment here that, and I mentioned this morning when I was out with Cochrane, and we talked a little bit about it earlier here, too, that there was a moment when, and I will never forget this, in the primary of 1988, I just started working in radio and talk radio, and there was you got to remember that
1988, right?
1988, yes, not 1888.
Clarification.
I was, thank you. However, I will just tell
How old
you,
are
Teddy
you?
Roosevelt and I, very dear friends. If you go back,
I was going to think you'd go with Warren Harding.
Yeah, exactly. Oh well, Warren Harding and I partied a lot.
Yeah, she
together.
Went to Northwestern. Yeah. She's the only one that knows.
Yeah, no, we know Warren well here. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that as you'll recall, Pat Buchanan had pulled populism into that race in 1988.
They well, and then
again in 1992.
His 1992 speech at the convention. I remember watching that, thinking that was the most disgusting speech I'd seen. As a Republican, he punched every button of what Trump punches now.
Right.
He did it in 92.
Pat Buchanan did. And at that point, the Bushes realized what they really needed to do was to court that Republican audience that was out there that was following Pat Buchanan, that was following Rush Limbaugh. And I will never forget this. That
in the primary.
Limbaugh, yep. During the primary of 1992, was using the... And this, you know, this is all in the aftermath of Willie Horton in 1988. You know, they were willing to go down this road. They were willing to play into that form of populism and that form of, you know, scare the Republicans that everybody's out to get them kind of politics.
And that ad, if you watch it today, you're like, wow, that's nothing.
It's nothing, right? Exactly.
Totally nothing.
But in 1992 is a change year here because Buchanan drove H.W. Bush to play this game. And I'll never, so Rush Limbaugh was supporting Buchanan. George Bush invited Limbaugh to spend the night in the Lincoln bedroom of the White House. He did. And then he completely changed his tune. And he went with George. And again, this is the early years of Limbaugh. He was very powerful at that point. Still, I mean, he became real powerful real fast, right? But this was the early years, his first 3 or 4 years on the air.
But that's back when that was... It was the Christian Coalition.
Right.
With 92 and then 96, it actually hit here big time.
Yeah. So it was an interesting moment there to try to... They were smart in how they tried to... The George H.W. Bush people, they were taking on Bill Clinton. They had to figure out an angle with Republicans, and they were trying to do it. But I think that Pat Buchanan had already done the damage to him. And then Ross Perot jumping in changed everything.
Yeah, remember, Perot got in and got out and then got back in, but he still got 18%. I don't think Bill Clinton ever cleared 50 in either of the two times he ran. But for Ross Perot, Bill Clinton doesn't win.
In planning for his funeral, he has asked for Donald Trump to be there and not speak, but he wants him to be there because...
Well, by the way, that's
the tradition.
Clear here. The tradition is that one former president will speak, and his son is the one who will speak.
That's right. And he's sort of... There isn't any slight in that, but he's saying that the office of the presidency is so important, he wanted to make sure he was there in those planning stages. You didn't see that with, you know, McCain and others. But you think about who he was in his aversion to Trump, this lifelong Republican... publicly stated that he voted for Hillary Clinton rather than Donald Trump, called him a blowhard, was at such odds of what he was doing to his party that he felt so visceral about it. He is coming to the funeral, but it's still, I mean, it's a reminder of the way this party has split.
Well, he respects the presidency, and I think that's the key, but he's a lot like a lot of Republicans that said the same things, but I would never go as far as vote for Hillary Clinton. He couldn't pull that trigger. But yeah, a lot of us feel that way. And I welcome the discussion because we got to figure out where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the Trump approach is sustainable. Certainly not in Illinois.
No, I don't think
he lost by a million votes here.
And when you look at the numbers in congressional districts around the country that he lost by, including in states that he had won before that he needs to win again.
California, complete wipeout.
Yeah. Totally.
The California Republican Party is dead.
Which is interesting because the California Republican Party is the party that brought Ronald Reagan. Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan.
But even after that, we had Pete Wilson, who would have been, had he not had a couple missteps, might have been a formidable presidential candidate. Yeah, that Orange County, that there's enough votes there. How many, 56 electoral votes?
They're claiming voter fraud there, though. They're everybody's jumping up and down about voter fraud. Because I mean,
the only guy that won out there is the one that's under indictment.
Oh, good.
Oh, he didn't win.
Duncan Hunter won, didn't he?
I don't think he did.
I think he did.
We'll double check.
Yeah, if I'm wrong, I apologize.
All right, because I thought he went down. Oh man, that's a special cat right there.
A buddy of mine represents him
as an attorney.
Yeah,
He better get paid up front. That's the one thing I think we learned about Duncan Hunter is he might be a little lower on cash than we thought.
I just had drinks with him a couple weeks ago out in San Diego, and I said the same thing. I go, you got paid up front, right?
Yeah.
He goes,
Yeah, it's really important. All right, Pat, thank you. You know, I hate to end the tribute to George H.W. Bush, an American hero, and that's the definition of an American, of a great American public servant,
totally.
George Herbert Walker Bush. The Bush family in total, I think. You know, they are a service-oriented family, and it comes down from George H.W. Bush's mother, they say. You know, his father, Prescott Bush, was a United States Senator from Connecticut.
And Barbara was a Pierce.
Right.
President Pierce.
So, Duncan Hunter did win. All right. I thought he had now. Oh, that's going to be fun to watch.
Hey, but you know what? Watch this. I was just watching it. My son's out there. I said, you better get over there and watch this, because to me, it's a time to reflect on an amazing life and what the country's all about.
And
no
what
question.
The spirit of the United States of America is embodied in all of this. So people should take in this, and hopefully the president takes in some of this and stylistically can adjust to what he sees. And you know, this outpouring of love. I can promise you that this outpouring of love for this former president, when Donald Trump leaves this mortal coil and, you know, years on from now, there will not be the similar outpouring of love. What you saw happen to Richard Nixon at his funeral, where people were trying to dodge being there.
Not Bob.
I mean,
you know, he does have an opportunity to turn this around, and it's all based on style, not necessarily substance.
Well, I guarantee you the next 48 hours, similar to when John McCain was being eulogized, that he will be bouncing off the walls, sending out tweets.
Yeah, there will be something that happens. Yeah. All right, we got to run here.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's get now to Judy, find out what's coming up at the top of the hour.
There may be a major petition battle brewing in the Chicago mayor's race.
Bye. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
All right.
Just like the one.
This is like, did you just see that? And we'll talk about this a little bit later on. But because we want to talk about our holiday show, but before you see that, there's a radio station that dumped. This has become a big national controversy. That dumped Dean Martin song.
Baby,
it's cold
outside. It's been under scrutiny for a couple of years now. The millennials really have brought a lot of increased attention to that song.
Oh, the millennials!
Yeah. I blame the millennials
because it's really a song about roofing somebody. But the point is. We will talk about that, but I think if you're going to take that, I think White Christmas has got to go too now, doesn't it?
All right.
White
Christmas piling on.
I mean, come on. I guess they all got to go, except for that baby-making song that I love so much.
Yeah,
anyway, we'll talk about that a little
good.
Bit later on. Listen, the first Roel is coming your way on Friday. It is sold out. If you would like to attend, you can go to the website and get on the wait list, and we'll clear the wait list on Thursday if there's anything still left. We are we have a lot. It's going to be a busy event.
Absolutely.
Put it that way.
Thank you for signing up. It's going to be a blast.
It's
a ton of fun.
Brought to you by New Balance Chicago. It's at Dirty Nelly's in Palatine. It is Friday from 3 to 7. The Ides of March are going to be there. Carnival Wagon's going to be there. Tom Skilling is going to be there.
Yes, he is.
Two guys who think they're both Santa Claus.
But the
we'll
real
find out
Santa's
which one is
one
real.
Of them.
Yeah. Bring a new unwrapped toy or game for kids of all ages. If you're attending, you already know you're attending because you've signed up on the website. There are going to be amazing prizes there as well, including a Blackhawks painting by Elliot Fromm and his new LUVartshoes.com. They've got shoes for you as well. $100 gift certificates to New Balance, tickets to the opening night of A Bronx Tale. I mean, it's going to be a great, great, great event brought to us by, presented by New Balance Chicago with locations in Lincoln Park, Oak Brook Terrace, Orland Park, and Schaumburg, and sponsored by Apple Chevrolet, who is collecting toys for us on the South Side right
Healthy.
Now. Go down there, 8585 West 159th Street in Tinley Park, Architect of Chicagoland, and Hilton's of Chicago. And speaking of Hilton's of Chicago, Gene Hare is the area director of sales and marketing for said organization. And Gene, thank you so much for being with us. And thank you so much for your sponsorship of this and your dedication to this.
Oh, thank you. We're really excited to be here and to be a part of it. The holidays are something that we're very passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And the charity that you partner with, Toys of Tots, We're very excited about that. We actually did something in our sales complex. Each year we pick a charity to sponsor, and this year it was Toys for Tots. Awesome. And we're going to be doing a donation from the sales complex with the Hiltons of Chicago of $1,000.
Wow.
For the Toys
Thank
for Tots.
You.
And you're doing that.
In,
now, people can do that. It's a cash donation. Let me explain what they do with a cash donation for Toys for Tots. Mm-hmm. It is the coolest thing ever. So it's the United States Marine Corps Reserves, right? Now, the United, who are the United States Marine Corps Reserves? And we specifically partner with the 2nd Marines 24th Battalion, 224, to be the – that's up on Foster Avenue here in Chicago. The reservists are guys who are cops and firefighters and painters and businessmen and whatever they happen to be by day. But they are in the Marine Reserves, and their unit, the 224, can get called up, can get activated, which means that they have to go back into training, and then they have to go to wherever they're being sent, somewhere in the world. And the 224 has been activated a number of times since September 11th. Mm-hmm. And there has been, a decade ago, they were in the Triangle of Death in Iraq.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that is as real as it gets. First of all, when you're going to the Triangle of Death, anytime they say the Triangle of Death, they mean it, right? And these are some of, you know, these are people that are your next door neighbors here by day, and then, you know, for that year or a little bit over a year, then they get sent off to go do, you know, what the United States, the Pentagon wants them to go do somewhere in the world. And these are really amazing people. And the other amazing people are the spouses of these folks. Mostly these are guys, and their wives are back here at home with their families, taking care of their families. For Toys for Tots, what they do is when you give them money, the week before the distribution, which is going to be, I think, in 2 weeks, they go out. They give the Marine wives, whether it's here in Chicago or in San Diego or wherever it happens to be, but this is in Chicago. The money you give here in Chicago stays in Chicago, goes to those Marine spouses, and they go shopping.
That's awesome.
They have a proprietary deal with Walmart, and so the Walmarts throughout the Chicago area, and they go and they clear the shelves with the thousands, tens of thousands of dollars that they have. I mean, can you imagine going to a Walmart with like $10,000?
The options.
Right? I mean, just imagine what goes on in there. And it is just such an amazing thing for these families, because they bring their kids with them to do the shopping for
the
other
kids.
Help.
They know what the kids want.
Right. I mean, it's not for those kids. It's for the kids. And the kids buy for other kids. It's part of the series and the esprit de corps of the Corps of the United States Marine Corps. So it's really an amazing event. So if you can't bring a toy on Friday, money is fine. We'll give it to the Marines. Generally, check is best, because then you can, you know, deduct it to the maximum extent of the law. I don't know what that law is anymore, but whatever it is.
Consult you can tax do that. Professional.
Yes. Consult your attorneys.
For that.
But Hiltons of Chicago, in giving us $1,000, I mean, just think about that. Think how far
that
goes.
Seriously. Thank you, guys.
So.
For 70 years, too, it's amazing how many lives they impact, how many kids, 7 million kids across the U.S. and hundreds of thousands here in the Chicagoland area.
And the donations that you give here in Chicago stay in Chicago.
That's right.
Whether it's cash
Stays
or the
local.
Toys, they all stay here. Which is amazing.
That's awesome, because the youth program is a big part of the Hilton core values. We partner with several organizations to try and benefit the youth. Camp for Kids with Cancer was with us in August. We do Culinary Kids for baking.
Oh,
and
sweet.
That they partner with our executive chef at the Palmer House and learn how to make brownies, which was invented at the Palmer House.
What?
Yeah.
The brownie was invented at the Palmer House?
Thank
right.
you, Palmer House.
Lynn, let's be honest.
Let's
be thankful, because a day without chocolate is a wasted day.
Absolutely. I agree.
You know what?
I have no idea.
Gene, I'm sorry. We got to go back to this. What year did this happen?
1893, the World's Fair.
The brownie was... I mean, see, I think
I'm fact-checking you.
There were a couple of things that... What if you were wrong? Would you tell him? There were a couple of things in that, because Devil in the White City, which is about the Columbian Exposition in 1893.
Great book.
Half that book takes place... In the, you know, outside of, you know, there's two stories going on. It's the preparation for the Columbian Exposition, and a lot of the stuff happened at the Palmer House for that. And a lot of the dinners between these guys, the Palmer House was every, like, it was the Gibson's times 1 billion of Chicago back then. It was where all the power brokers would go and hang out and have dinner every night and turtle soup. Remember, it was on the menu. They still
the best.
At the Palmer House, they still serve that till fairly recently.
Yeah, in fact, one of the things that we look at when we do our anniversaries is bringing back the menus, some of the original menus from the different time frames. Bertha Palmer, she drove the invention of the brownie.
1893, and apparently you still use the same recipe?
We do.
Wow.
I got to get over there and have some brownies.
And aren't you guys the ones that added a scoop of ice cream and some whipped cream? Made the chocolate brownie sundae.
I don't know if I can take credit for the whipped ice cream and the whipped cream.
Do you know the marketing director of Hilton's doesn't know?
Well, because I went on a trolley tour and they said that. But maybe they meant just the brownie part. I wasn't listening too closely.
Yeah,
probably.
Thank you for sharing. When you think about those three hotels though, that we're highlighting here, between the Palmer House, the Drake, I met George H.W. Bush in the Drake. The place where for decades, if you're a politician or royalty, Prince Charles stayed there. Lady Diana stayed there separately.
Thank you.
It's true, though. Actually, it was separately. I think when the Queen was in Chicago in the 1950s, she stayed at the Drake. The Palmer House is still to this day. You go into the Palmer. I just did an event there a couple of months ago. It is. You step back in time, but it meets modernity. It's totally, up to date.
Good way to put it.
The bar and all that is really great. It's a great place to go, but I'm like, the place just drips with history.
Mm.
It's amazing. And, you know, what a good friend of ours, Ken Price, who's the resident historian at the Palmer House, you know, always tells the story when, you know, we talk about historical or history, when you take the H and the I off, you have a story. Right, and those three properties really have the most amazing stories to talk about.
Yeah,
when you think about Princess Diana or tea, afternoon tea. This is like the tea season for the Drake. We'll have over 30,000 people going through Drake to do afternoon tea over the next couple weeks, and it's generations, you know, grandmothers, moms, daughters,
forever.
Or the Palmer House doing the brownie, coming for the brownie, or coming to experience the Empire Room, which was the big supper club.
Yeah. Oh, the Empire Room was not just a supper club. It was the place where people, I mean, you know, Sinatra, everything. Those guys would go play the Empire Room.
Right.
That was a big, big deal to get on the stage there.
Or the Hilton Chicago, where one of my favorite things, you kind of busted me on the brownie a little bit.
No, she did.
She did. That's right.
I just can't believe I didn't know that.
The suite from Home Alone.
Uh-huh.
Was actually at the Hilton Chicago, not the Plaza in New York.
Oh.
How about that?
So.
Yeah, Home Alone 2.
Home Alone 2.
Home Alone 2, yeah. The Chicago, and what is it called? The Presidential Suite, I guess?
The Conrad Suite. It's the largest suite in the Midwest.
Mm. Is, and it doesn't have its own helipad, too? Yeah. That is the craziest thing. That's where every rock act of the 1970s would try to get that thing until Conrad Hilton, you know, the company that owned it then got wise and said, we're going to have to stop throwing the piano out over the balcony of the suite. It wasn't
rock star proof, apparently.
Apparently was not. It is one of the most beautiful rooms in the world. There's special events. People can rent that room for special events. Corporations do it. I know, actually, John Alfirovich from Apple Chevrolet rented it for his wife's birthday. It was the greatest party I have ever been to. It's like the Blackhawks rent it during the Blackhawks, you know, their VIP parties are up there. It's opulent. It's crazy. You just imagine, once again, you just imagine what over the years, like Sinatra stayed there and these world tours, the Rolling Stones, Elton John, all those guys in the 70s would stay there. It was really, it's very, still very, very special.
Well, where classic meets cool. I mean, really, that's what the Hilton Chicago is. And, you know, the concerts with Lollapalooza and all the festivals that go on.
Right.
You're right at the perfect location to walk across the street and see everything. And I mean, the other great thing about Hilton Chicago is my favorite is the food. Chef Mario.
It's excellent.
It is so good.
Started there in the kitchen, washing pots and pans, and is now one of the top chefs for Hilton.
That's amazing.
There.
I love doing galas
for doing galas for presidents for 3,000 people.
Oh,
it is really those three things. Wait, hold on. We do need to talk about this very quickly here. Dibs program, because we've been reading the commercial for this, and unfortunately, you're having me read the commercial, so it's a little confusing. But because you have it right, I have it wrong. this whole idea is, if you want to do a staycation in Chicago and you're, you know, from the area, you can call dibs at one of those three hotels we were just talking about and come down for a great weekend, whether it's around the holidays or in January. You want to just get away from, you know, just do something that's a little different and enjoy all the stuff that's downtown. You can do that at the Drake, at the Palmer House, or at the Chicago Hilton.
Correct. You know, the dibs program, I mean, dibs in Chicago is a tradition.
Yes.
I mean, it's been supported by two.
Do you have to bring your ironing board when you go to this?
No, but you could bring your lawn chair. We do actually have a dibs bingo board that you get bingo cards that people can take pictures. You know, we've already had one good snowstorm, so people have been sending us some of the pictures
of dibs,
you know, of dibs, everything from, you know, wagons to cones to chairs. Somebody put a couch out there. There was one funny
dinette set.
Someone had their little baby in their 4-year old while they were shoveling around, so they were. Everything.
Baby's got to learn about snowstorms.
They got to learn about dibs. But the great thing about the program is, you know, you work hard to get those spots. It's the same thing at the hotel. Call dibs on great savings. Includes breakfast. It includes unlimited coffee, hot chocolate, or you can get something added to that.
What is the website for that?
If you go to www.hiltonsofchicagodibs.com.
So HiltonsofChicagoDibs.com.
Right.
No slashes in that.
No slashes.
All right. HiltonsofChicagoDibs.com. And it gives you, there are all kinds of deals.
Right.
On that. But that's a great way to spend especially if you bring the kids down. You cannot go wrong in any of those three hotels.
No. Nope.
Just an amazing experience.
It just feels like the holidays, too. It's a tradition in my family to visit the Palmer House.
Tea at the Drake.
At the Drake, right.
Palmer House.
The whole family was at Palmer Saturday. It's just a perfect spot for this time of year.
It's amazing. It's amazing. You go back in time and you stay in Moderni, just like Gene said. Gene, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate
it.
Gene here from Hiltons of Chicago.
Thank you.
And again, thank you for your donation to the Toys for Tots on Friday. We really appreciate that. And thank you for being with us here at WGN. Right now, Judy is here at WGN with the news update. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
A man shot near a South Loop Park this afternoon.
So this song has been outlawed.
Has it?
Yeah, essentially.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go
away.
Baby,
it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands just like
my mother will start to
beautiful, worry. What's your
and father heart? Will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace.
So
roar.
Really I'd better scurry.
Please don't.
Or maybe just a half a drink more.
Put some records on while I
the neighbors might think.
Okay.
What's going on
there?
Sorry,
so
he's just persistent.
Okay, so here's it. So what is it, a radio station in Ohio or something, right? Is the one the first one to ban this.
No longer
idiot
will play.
Idiot millennials ruining everything.
Yeah.
Baby, it's cold outside.
And
oh, you're taking credit for it, Kevin.
It made international headlines on Fox News, of course, the minute that this happened, because it's political correctness run amok. But, the funny thing is, for years, I have known women who hate that song. Just hate it.
Because if you view it with the lens of today, I think you might see a problem with it.
It's literally my favorite song.
Of course it is.
But if you view it of the lens of the bygone era, I don't have a problem with it at all.
And also, it's
but
not-
wait, hold on. But it's but you get what's going on. In a bygone era, what is different between a bygone era?
Because I think it was just flirtation. I don't think, I mean.
No, it was just before the Revelations came out that was really going on in past generations.
Right. This has been going on forever.
Right, the Weinstein stuff just came about. Like, this stuff has been going on forever. It was probably worse when that song came out. It's probably way worse.
Probably was.
Right, but in that time, a girl couldn't stay at someone's house. She would be frowned upon. So even if she wanted to stay, society wouldn't allow it if they weren't married.
I honestly think Violetta's right there. I mean, there was a different way. You weren't supposed to stay. A good girl didn't stay, and she wanted to. It's different than being trapped into it. Whereas women today, I think, feel empowered. They can stay or not stay.
And I think
See, that makes it better in today's lens, right?
No, I think today you have the choice.
Right, you have women's power.
Right. Yeah. Right. So she got the choice.
And there you would have been looked at differently.
He's basically, I think there's a verse
so
in there.
Society was forcing her to leave.
Right, but she didn't want to.
Right.
There's a verse
so it's different than being forced by him.
But he's like, have another drink, keep drinking, right?
And isn't there something in the drink? Doesn't she say
that's
that?
That's a part I just, like, well, we got to hear
means
again.
Did you put a roofie in this
she
drink?
She means alcohol, or this is a little strong, or whatever.
Yeah.
I got
right.
The lyrics.
See, the point.
What's in this drink?
Baby, yeah. What's in this drink?
Yeah.
Right.
She says,
okay,
say,
that's the
she
part.
Says, say, what's in this drink?
So we would say that's a roofie, yeah. But I don't think that's a roofie. Isn't she just saying it's alcohol?
Well, but I think she's saying, are you putting alcohol in my drink while you're trying to get me to stay here?
Well, what does she think?
Come
she's
on.
Getting regular.
That is the worst part.
Yeah, what are you going to give her, warm milk?
I mean, if it's the 1940s, she just went over there for a...
For what?
Right. A hot chocolate.
Yes.
Because everybody was innocent in the 1940s.
Right. Yeah. No one had sex in the 40s.
I don't... Never happened.
So... Also, though, I could see her saying no a couple. So a lot of people argue, you say, you just keep saying no, or like you're being polite. You don't want to say no. So you're like, oh, okay, maybe another drink, maybe half a cigarette, whatever. But you do that maybe one, two times. You don't do it like 12, 15 times.
Well, you do when it's a song.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And you need to keep the lyrics going a little bit, you know?
Well, what I'm saying is, yeah, she wouldn't have said it's... Maybe so many times she would say no by the end of it.
Then there wouldn't be a
but
song.
But there is no at the end of this.
Well, because she wanted to stay.
I think she wants to stay.
Did
but
she
knows
stay?
There's pressure.
Yeah, she stayed.
She says, okay,
she
fine, stayed. Just okay. Another drink then. That took a lot of convincing.
I say she drank that drink and she stayed all right.
Okay.
You know what? Actually,
let's finish the song right here.
So it was the walk of shame the next yeah. day.
Harvey, I'm feeling a little dizzy.
Well, by the fourth time, the guy would have asked her to leave.
Okay, now you got the follow-up song is Now You Gotta Go.
All right, forget this. Put the game on and get out of here.
Get up. Wake up. Now You Gotta Go.
Too much
horrible. Wake up.
All right, enough of this work. You in or you're out?
I feel like Rose said that quite a few times.
I know. I was like, that came too naturally.
Isn't it time for you to go now?
Ooh, I got to be on the air. Yeah. It's 6 in the morning.
I got a thing.
Your dad really is going to think about where you are. You should probably get home.
Yeah,
no, I don't have any coffee.
Your mother's probably worried sick. Get out of here.
Yeah, you really should go now.
Hurry home.
But that's the part. To call me.
That's the lens of the time. My mother will start to worry. My father will be pacing the floor. It's just a different time. We're waiting for her to come home.
But hear the fireplace roar.
I mean, right. Family's still
have
concerned,
half
right?
Half a drink more.
Mm-hmm. Just a half a drink more.
Say, what's in this
then
drink?
I'll call Uber.
This drink tastes like...
Hey, what's okay, in there, this drink?
Listen
that's
to this.
The worst part.
But here's... Okay.
I think she saw the pill fizzing in there.
See,
what is that?
There's one... There's a bridge here in mm-hmm. which... Ah, you're very pushy, you know. I like to think of it as opportunistic, the guy says.
Hey, he's taking advantage of the situation.
Yeah, I'm an opportunist.
Well, I got a female here and it's late. You know, we'll start a fire.
You're half drunk. You're going to find me more attractive anyway.
This is a perfect storm for me right now.
I've got to
capitalize on it.
I'll get you home, or you can get home.
I've already
It's 1940s. We don't have Uber, but we can always call a cab with a guy named Mac driving it.
Well, also, he's invested a lot, so at this point, he's not going to capitalize on it if he doesn't continue to pursue it.
So she says, it actually gets worse as it goes along.
It does, and you're right. It's almost like I make up in my mind that the lyrics aren't as bad as they are, but when you hear them...
All right, so it goes from I really can't stay in the first verse.
Yeah.
And to the neighbors might think, like, this could be bad.
Right.
And then she says, well, you're pushy. And he goes, no, I'm an opportunist. And then she goes, I simply must go.
That does sound like a firm no.
The answer is no.
Okay, that sentence, when you say it like that.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah, sounds terrible.
When you talk it and not sing it.
So,
listen to this one. I ought to say no, no, no. Mind if I move in closer?
And he also never asked her to sleep over. I mean, you know, she could still get home on time.
So nice and warm. The welcome. My sister will be suspicious. Gosh, your lips look delicious. His response to her.
That one doesn't stand up.
Right?
That's why it has to rhyme.
My brother will be there at the door. Waves upon a tropical shore.
Okay, obviously they just can't find things to rhyme.
My maiden aunt's mind is vicious. Gosh, your lips are delicious.
Try that one today. See what happens.
So that's when she did kiss him,
right,
because they are delicious.
Well, he kissed her for sure.
Right,
she was trying to talk.
He's gone in for
I don't want it, but those are so delicious.
I wonder.
Wait, hold on. Let's see. It sounds lovely here.
Simply must go.
Maybe it's cold outside.
The answer is no.
Maybe it's cold outside.
This weather-
My sister will be suspicious. My brother will be there at the door. My maiden's mind is vicious. Well, maybe just a cigarette more. I gotta get home.
Right, now, there's you miss a little line in there. Because all
what's
that
the
was
line?
Maybe just a cigarette more, never such a blizzard before, and I don't even smoke. He says, it's sort of like, yeah, go ahead.
Smoke the whole pack, let's go. I love smoking.
I get some.
I love cigarettes.
Smoke.
Oh, okay. Judy bringing the heat, final 2 weeks. I love it.
She meant a cigar.
What's going to happen? Am I going to get fired?
Do we have a commercial break?
This is going to be a fun couple of weeks with Judy. Yeah. I can just feel it. This is going to be awesome.
She's coming in hot, kids.
She is.
And now I love that song, and it's kind of...
I know,
really
that's the
ruined.
Problem.
It's just a song.
It's bringing them together.
Here's the thing. We just heard it. She didn't seem afraid.
Well,
she's singing. How do we know? She could be British, too. We don't know, because when they sing, they all sound like they're American. I don't know if she's scared or not.
Oh,
I'm going to look at it like a public service announcement. This is bad.
I mean, there's a storm outside. He's keeping her safe,
right? Just try speaking those words today to a date and see what happens.
How does that song end?
All right, hold on one second.
How does it end?
All right, hold on. I'll tell you how it ends. It ends. Let's see here. I'm going to do this as a read because I think this helps us.
Cold read.
The final verse is: I got to get home, baby. You'll freeze out there. Say, lend me a coat. It's up to your knees out there. Oh, God.
Judy, don't say anything.
You'll really be grand. You've really been grand. This is her saying to him. You've really been grand. I feel when I touch your hand. What are you touching me for? But don't you see? How can you do this thing to me? He says.
That's a little
guilting.
There's
the
bound
worst.
To be talk tomorrow. Think of my life. Long sorrow.
Oh, geez. This is when it's getting desperate. And you're like, I made the right choice.
I know. It's funny. Least, I don't hear those when I hear the song.
At least there will be plenty implied if you caught pneumonia and died.
Is that the real lyric?
You could die out there. Just stay.
Right.
Stay. Oh, my God.
I really can't stay.
Is that it?
Get over that old out.
What? I did not know that.
Baby, it's cold. Baby, it's cold outside. Okay, fine. Just another drink then. That took a lot of convincing. That's how it ends. How it ends.
So, yeah. I think we can all agree she made the decision. She wasn't, you know, she was in control.
But
she made the ultimate decision, which I don't even know what that was. She had another drink and then she left.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I direct your attention back to the second verse.
Okay.
Say, what's in this drink?
That part.
No cabs to be had out there is what he says.
I love the desperation at the end.
Oh.
Think of my lifelong sorrow if you leave.
But that's what guys do. They're
I think you've been here all night. She could die. She could die if she leaves.
Right.
Or he's threatening to kill her.
That could be a threat, Your Honor.
I see it as a threat. Approach the bench.
Just have one roofie more. So strange. I mean, I'm just reading it now. It's funny.
It works.
What? That's not the point here, Kevin.
Yeah. All right.
The point is the lyrics do sound bad when you read them.
A little bit.
Paul, very quickly, you're on WGN. Go ahead, sir.
I heard the exact same song with the roles reversed. And the song is cute. I mean, it's a real nice song with the roles reversed, you know.
When are the roles ever reversed?
Well, it's just a song, but the girl is inviting the guy to stay, and you know. So I mean, it's totally reversed.
Yeah, see, that's cute. Yeah,
if you ever hear this, if you hear it, it just came out this year, and they update a little bit. Instead of records, they use CDs and different things like that.
Right.
But
and medical marijuana.
It's an updated song. Yeah, they might. I don't remember. But
gummy bears.
What's
in this gummy bear?
If you hear it reversed like that.
All right, thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Just one gummy bear more.
What's interesting, though, is if it's reversed, the girl ends up seeming clingy if she's begging him to stay.
Had a stage 5 cling last night, boys. She wouldn't let me leave her house.
What if a girl said to you, gosh, your lips look delicious. Would you like that? Would you love that, Kevin?
I want to hear what Rose says first.
Rose is nice.
Rose
purposefully dodging
bear.
That one, pretending to talk to the producer
right
now.
If a woman said your lips look delicious, would you like that? That's what Anna and Violetta want
to know. Yeah, no, yeah.
It looks delicious, yeah. Oh, gosh. Imagine what your friends will say if you leave.
Yeah. Yeah, really? They don't taste delicious.
I just had onions.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. All I know is that the world is not the world. I just want you to imagine this. Is this song still cute and innocent if it's Donald Trump singing it to a porn star?
No. I'd say no.
Thank you. Thank Mic you for... Who's knocking?
Come on in. Get out.
That's the guy David at the girl's apartment.
It's cold outside. David just Jennings, stay in here.
What's happening in the newsroom at the top of the hour?
Well, CPS loses one to a judge in Chicago. We'll tell you why.